We're going to zero in on a key challenge that comes with dual career couples in the workplace, a mismatch between school and workday. It's a relic of a bygone era and outdated family norms that has left parents and school districts scrambling to find solutions. And it's leaving most families to contend with at least a two-hour gap between when school ends and when the workday ends. Well, here with us to dig into this question are Beth Polan, Associate Professor of Business Management at Eastern Kentucky University, and Richard Day, Professor of Educational Foundations in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction here at EKU. And thank you both for stopping by Eastern Standard.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So why do we have this problem? Typical work hours out of sync with typical school hours.
Well, historically, we had both adults and children working long, brutal hours in factories in the 19th century, and that was not seen as being a good thing for kids whatsoever. So there was a big effort to try to pull kids out of that adult world and to treat them more humanely. And I think the separation quite possibly began there when America began seeing children as valuable and worthy of being nurtured and educated. And as society became more technological, that need became greater as well. So it's probably a separation that needed to occur back in those days. Now, the modern problem is a little bit different.
Beth, back in those days, it was typical that the mother stayed at home. Women stayed at home. And so there was no real need for after-school care.
That's correct. If we look all the way back to the 1800s, in the early 1800s, women made up about 5% of the workforce. By the 1950s, that had increased to about 30%. Today, we're right around 50-50 when it comes to men and women in the workplace. If we look just a few decades ago, it was fine to have the school day end at 2 or 2:30 because there was a parent, usually the woman, there was a parent that was at home that could pick up the child, bring the child home, give the child a snack, take them to after-school activities, help them with their homework. This is a modern problem in that there are more dual-career couples in the workforce now than ever before. So from a workplace perspective and from the parent side of this, this is a more recent problem, a more modern problem that we're just now having dual-career couples in the workforce.
I mentioned in the introduction that what we've created here is this two-hour gap on average, which is a lot of time. What sorts of problems are created by this misalignment of schedules?
I was a former principal at Cassidy Elementary in Lexington, Kentucky, and I can tell you that little guys wear out. And just the idea of, well, we're going to extend the day for children that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, that's a difficult prospect. And what you end up doing is building in rest times or some mechanism just to have the kids be able to make it. So that's just a basic human need that young kids have.
Let's look at the economic costs of this. I've read that fewer than half of American public schools do offer an after-school program. So what happens when parents simply can't afford child care while they're working to, in part, pay for child care? I think it's 3% of elementary school students, 19% of middle school students look after themselves from 3 to 6 p.m. during the school week. So it has a huge economic impact in a lot of ways. You want to talk about that, Beth?
Sure. When we look at dual career couples in the workplace, we do see a trend of women leaving the workforce around age 30. And the question becomes why. Now, there's many reasons why a woman might leave the workforce, and many of those reasons have absolutely nothing to do with children or family. So I do want to preface with that. But because of this correlation with age, it does beg the question, what role do family commitments have in a woman's life that might affect her professionally? We do know that research shows if they are going to leave the workforce for child-rearing issues, it is most likely to be after the first child. We see that the likelihood of leaving the workforce after subsequent childbirths gets less and less. You know, so when we ask why are women leaving the workforce, oftentimes the reason could be in this age range because it's so expensive to pay for childcare, to have sitters, to have nannies, to take your child to and from daycare. You know, we say cost, you said economic cost, and I'm guessing you meant in terms of money, but it's also a time commitment too. If the child care is not close to your place of employment, you might be leaving the house an hour before work so that you can drop your child off at daycare, get into work, work the day, and then you might have to leave work a few minutes early or be rushed after work to have the time to pick up your child. We also know that daycares charge extra fees if you're late. Mm-hmm. You know, so yes, it's an economic cost, but it's also a cost in terms of resources and time.
It's not unusual to hear a young exasperated parent complain that she's just working this second job just to pay for childcare.
That's correct. And oftentimes, it's not just about the income, the money that is showing up in that paycheck, but it also has to do with benefits such as health insurance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Tom, I think what you're bringing up is really a basic equity issue that public schools have to think about all the time. The answer to the question, what happens to the kids that don't have the childcare? Well, they don't have childcare. If the American public thought that this issue was sufficient enough to address in an across-the-board kind of a fashion, then it would be a matter of the public saying, this is something we want our public schools to do, and we're going to figure out a way to fund it. The same thing occurred when we expanded the school day and kids didn't have lunch. They couldn't go home for lunch anymore. We provided lunch. More recently, schools provide breakfast. When I was a kid, they lined us up in the hallway and gave us booster shots and fluorine treatments for dental care. I mean, the schools have been used to try to address some of these social kinds of issues. And when it becomes a high enough priority and we want to do something about it, we can. But then it's a federal lunch program or this program or that program or something done locally.
Which raises an even bigger question of what is the role that schools should play in our society?
Yeah.
Is it simply to educate our children, or is it more of a social issue that goes beyond simply just education?
And that role has changed over the decades. School once was a place to have kids away from the workforce where they were cared for, and they would learn basic reading, writing, arithmetic. There wasn't a very high academic goal, and it was very much about social development and those kinds of issues. More recent decades have viewed the school as an institution that is tasked with providing certain kinds of student achievement results in terms of test scores, and very much more academically focused than it had been, say, in the 70s and 80s. And so that shift continues to occur.
I'm betting that educational policymakers out there, in particular those who are on the budget side of things, are smacking their foreheads right now saying, well, all this is great, but we don't have 2 cents to rub together in this state. Our school districts don't have enough money to pay for teachers' salaries as it is. And here we're talking about the need to extend somebody's salaries, if not teachers. Somebody has to be there. So we're talking about a budgetary issue here. Can we overcome that?
Sure. I mean, it's something that we do whenever we choose to do it.
Uh-huh.
And the big landmark education case in Kentucky, Rose versus Council for Better Education, that was one of the issues that was argued by the legislature. They said, well, we don't have any more money. Fact of the matter is, the legislature is the one that determines what the school system is going to be like, how it's going to be funded, and whether or not taxes have to be increased or whatever. It's a matter of deciding what quality education system we want and then what it's going to take to fund it. And I'm not arguing one way or another. Perhaps the school system now is as good as we should expect it to be. But my opinion is that the state has been involved in some disinvestment in education over the past 20 or 30 years and has taken a step back. So perhaps fewer tax cuts might be one way, or to restore some things that have been cut in the past might be another way to try to address funding issues.
Sounds to me as though we need to focus on what we value.
And by we, it's not just the families and the schools, but it can also be the businesses. The organizations in our country can decide what role they play in this social issue. We talk about increasing funds to educational systems so that we can afford other programs. But on the business side, what can businesses do to help dual career couples?
That's a good question. What do you think?
Well, when we look at the statistics, about 60% of married couples with children have both parents who work. So this is not a small issue. This is an issue that is affecting many families in the United States and Kentucky. We do see a trend in companies recognizing that we have more dual career couples in the workforce than ever before. And this is great that companies are recognizing this. We see companies providing more flexible working arrangements where employees can choose the hours of the day or the hours of the week that they work. So they're still working full time, but it's a flexible work arrangement. We see more telecommuting, more employees working from home or working from places other than the traditional office. We see more ROWE, results-only work environments, R-O-W-E. That means that companies are saying, we don't care where you work or when you work, but we want to see the product or the output that you're producing. So there's a lot that can be done on the business side of this as well.
And Richard, I saw your wheels turning over there.
Well, if you look back historically, the Chamber of Commerce and Kentucky businesses have been some of the strongest proponents of good schools over the years, particularly in the 80s when the lawsuit was going on. They understood very clearly that one of the biggest things business needs is an educated workforce. And when companies try to decide where they're going to locate, that is one of the main things that they're looking for. And then that helps us grow economically in many ways. More recently, and this is just my own political observation, but it seems to me that the business lobby, if you will, or the Chamber of Commerce, perhaps, has kind of stepped back a bit in light of some advantageous tax programs that the current administration has advanced on their behalf. And I think they have appreciated that and they've sort of embraced that, but at the same time have not been as strong a voice for funding education as they once were.
I'd like to piggyback on something that you said, Richard. Companies have a huge incentive to make sure that children and young adults are well educated, because if young adults are graduating from high school and college without the skills needed to be successful in the workforce, then companies are the ones that end up footing that bill through training and development.
The business community is starved for skilled, talented, educated labor.
The goals have changed. When I was a kid, you could have a job as a mechanic and manage a family of four with the white picket fence and the American dream and the whole bit. You can't do that anymore. Technology has advanced the nature of work to the degree that someone educated at the level that I graduated with in 1969 would not make it in today's world. They need much better training in order to cope with 21st century needs and skills.
There's something that I don't want to miss in this conversation, and that's summer. Talk about a huge chunk of time that has to be accounted for, with parents out there scrambling to find camps, which are usually very expensive. Those hours are often less aligned with the workday. So it's just a huge problem. What do you all think about summer? Should we just get rid of giving kids time off in summer?
Well, there have been different year-round school kinds of ideas, but all of them that I'm aware of still boil down to the same number of days annually. It's just a matter of how you package them. So I guess some school districts, I don't know if anybody's up to 200 days a year or not. Some may be. I think we're 177 or 78 now, if I'm not mistaken, in Kentucky. So it becomes kind of a moot point. Of course, the summers off was another historical vestige meant to kind of match the harvest and the spring planting and that kind of thing. But if you look at Kentucky's agricultural schedule, I don't think they really match. Last I heard, the summer school off schedule kind of matches the agricultural schedule in Belgium, but not in America so much. So it's sort of a vestige of a bygone era, I suppose. But I think if you're talking about should we have more school days, that's a different issue. And then you expand that amount of time. But if we're just trading off days in summer for days that would be in spring and fall, then it's just a matter of how you package it.
Beth Pullen, what are your thoughts about that?
When you bring all this up, it is so true that there is a huge mismatch between the school day and the work day. I mean, part of it is the hours each day that school ends around 2 or 2:30 and the workplace ends at 5 or 5:30. We have the summer, the calendar year. If you look at the statistics on how often an employee takes off work, we see that on average, an employee will take off approximately 2 to 3 weeks of time each year. Students take off approximately 16 weeks of time each year between holidays and breaks, and that includes summer. So there's such big mismatches here. What I'd like to add to the conversation is the question, what problem are we trying to solve? Is it simply a mismatch in the timing of when students are in school and when employees are at their desk working? Could we have some after-school programs? Could we change the culture in the United States about the role that school and educational institutions play? We could, but that also might invite in other problems. For example, there's a lot of research that shows that meaningful time with family members can be just as valuable as time spent reading and working on academic work, particularly family dinners. The research on having children go home and sit down for a family dinner and have everyone in the family talk about their day, that's incredibly valuable. So yes, we can talk about solutions to changing the workday on the business side, changing the school day on the school side, on the educational side. But then I have to ask, what other disadvantages might we invite in the door?
That brings me right to the point that I was thinking about as I listened to you all, and that is the flip side of this is that we end up with a society that does nothing but work, work, work. We happen to be doing this interview during fall break at EKU, so a couple days off for everybody, a long weekend, which is a good thing. It encourages families to get together, do a little bit of traveling maybe to see distant relatives, which is a very healthy thing. So I guess we want to make sure, as policymakers are considering this, that they don't throw time off out with the bathwater. We keep a perspective on time to be with family, time to be with yourself, for that matter.
And free time. We see the value of free time in the workplace, that level of autonomy to give to employees and say, we want you to work on something, but you can choose whatever you want to work on. We see in companies that that level of autonomy is having excellent results. A lot of the products that we actually use on a daily basis came from companies offering their employees company resources, but autonomy in what they do. If we translate this into the school day and to children, having free time is really important for children. Children need to experience boredom because no one likes to be bored. And when a child is bored and they're uncomfortable because of that boredom, they will find a way to not be bored anymore. I mean, just that self-awareness of, I don't like being bored. I'm going to problem solve and think critically as to what I can do so that I'm not bored. That's a valuable skill for a child to develop. We see team functioning in children that's so important and they carry forward into the workplace. For example, it's important for children to have the free time to find their friends and say, hey, do you want to play a pickup game of baseball in the back lot or in the backyard? When those children come together and they don't have direct adult supervision, now, let's say there's an adult close by. Let's not leave the children totally alone. We've already talked about the problems that can bring. But when children have that autonomy to put a baseball game together on their own, to problem solve when there's a disagreement over whether the ball was in or out, to go through the process of choosing teams and designing the teams, those are all critical skills that they develop that they can carry forward in the workplace. So we do want to leave some degree of autonomy and free time in a child's day because they are still developing skills during that time.
And I think ultimately it's a matter of who we are as a society and whether or not we're a society that loves its children. And if we are, then it's incumbent upon us as a community of responsible adults to meet their legitimate needs, not their wants, not their whines, but what kids really need. And so if we find that the present school system isn't providing the number of services that we wish it would and that children really need, then I would hope this community of adults would decide that we want to improve our schools to that degree and somehow or another address the kinds of issues that we've talked about today.
Beth Polin, Associate Professor of Business Management at Eastern Kentucky University, and Richard Day, Professor of Educational Foundations in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at EKU. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Last week, we heard from Ashley Spaulding, a senior analyst with the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, that the gap between Kentucky's wealthy and poor school districts and state funding of public schools has fallen to near the levels that prompted enactment of the Kentucky Education Reform Act almost 30 years ago.
There's no funding for textbooks. There's no funding for professional development. We've seen cuts to our extended school services, which are our after-school programs that are especially so critical for students from low-income households.
School superintendents across Kentucky recently called on the legislature, due to make budget decisions in the 2020 session, to provide more overall education funding and support for teachers. In a moment...
I don't think it's appropriate for the President of the United States to refer to the press or any segment of American society as the enemy of the people.
CNN White House correspondent Jim Acosta talks with Tom Eblin about his new book and his views on being a high-profile network journalist in the age of Trump. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
Major support for Eastern Standard on WEKU is provided by the law firm Hicks & Funson. Kentucky lawyers Greg Funson and Shannon Church provide legal advice and representation in the areas of personal injury, catastrophic accident, and immigration law. More information at 859-777-7000.
Do you have a news tip, a comment, or a question for Eastern Standard? Leave a message at 859-622-WEKU. It might be featured on a future show. Would you like to listen again to this Eastern Standard or past episodes? Find them online at weku.fm or the WEKU mobile app. Now back to Eastern Standard with Tom Martin.